side of a new market, a new economy. So it's both for financial reasons and ethical reasons that foundations and other endowments should be divesting and investing. And in fact, foundations, along with faith groups, universities, we receive charitable tax status because we serve the public good. And if arguably our investments are contributing to the destruction of the public good, I believe we have mission-level responsibility to divest our assets.
And what are the energy assets you're investing in?
We're invested in, when you think about it, every industry needs to decarbonize to reduce the use of fossil fuels. So the kind of large umbrella of clean tech, you know, more sustainable businesses, it's almost endless in terms of every industry is implicated. But we're invested in renewables, we're invested in energy efficiency, we're invested in clean tech, and increasingly we're invested in energy access. There's 1 billion people in the world that do not have access to energy today, and they can leapfrog the old fossil fuel industry and the grid infrastructure with clean, renewable, and affordable energy. So investing in energy access also contributes to addressing poverty. So we're investing in energy access as well.
Given that universities are being pressured to do this, and now philanthropies, are there studies that prove that you can actually make money if you invest in renewables rather than fossil fuels, coal, oil?
Absolutely. And in fact, what really began as a student movement quickly migrated to the mainstream and the financial mainstream. Now, the head of the Bank of England to the heads of insurance companies, they're saying it is actually your fiduciary duty to look at climate risk to your portfolio because the financial risks are so significant.
And finally, what do you think, Scott Wallace, your grandfather, the late Vice President Henry Wallace, would say to President Trump today?
I think he would say, please resign. Just go away. He's bad for the country.
Scott Wallace and Ellen Dorsey of the Wallace Global Fund. And in full disclosure, Democracy Now! Is also supported by the Wallace Global Fund. That does it for today's show. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Tarina Nadura, and Andre Lewis. Mike DeFilippo and Miguel Nogueira and Paul Huckabee are our engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grand, David Prude, Ariel Boone. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now! Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, this is Joe Perry
and Steven Tyler of Aerosmith for Red. You know, it's okay to rock and roll and party down. Just don't get in that 2,000-pound bullet when you're done cocked. And please don't drink and drive.
I'm the one that jaded you.
A reminder that friends don't let friends drive drunk. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council, U.S. Department of Transportation, National Association of Broadcasters, and RAD.
When you purchase the latest TV, tablet, or smartphone, don't forget to do the right thing with your old ones. Recycle them. The Consumer Electronics Association and its members are making recycling your old devices as easy as buying new ones. Just go to greenergadgets.org, type in your zip code, and you'll instantly find the recycling location closest to your home. You'll also find recycling tips, like asking the store where you buy your new TV if they'll haul away your old one. Don't let your old tech tools clog your local landfill. Just visit greenergadgets.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. The time is just about 6 o'clock, maybe a little bit after 6 o'clock. And it's time once again for Off the Wall. Those are the drums of change, by the way, I found out. Yeah, and they're coming. They're coming.
Lots of change. I remember those drums. Lots of change,
yes.
Yeah, no, those are good drums.
Coming over the hill. It's a good feeling. And, you know, today's the 4th of July. This is like the longest holiday weekend ever because it can't seem to end. You know, it's since Friday, I've noticed that you can't get things done. People are going home early. So, you know, Friday, beginning of the long weekend, okay, you know, 4th of July, whatever. Saturday, you know, another lost day because it's a weekend and it's a holiday coming up. Sunday is Sunday, so you can't get anything done then either. But then, you know, Monday is July 3rd, and the 4th still hasn't gotten to us. Things are closed again or very slow. And today, Tuesday, is the 4th of July, and of course, all sorts of things are closed you wouldn't expect to be closed, like your local neighborhood bar, for instance. All sorts of slowdowns and stoppages. it's frustrating when you burn out your power supply on Friday and you need to order a new one and it won't even get to you until Wednesday at the earliest if you expedite shipping. You know, that's almost a full week with expedited shipping. Explain how that works, Kyle. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, that's unfortunate and really arduous. But yeah, the heat has an impact. It's making even air conditioners get uncomfortable and cranky.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really quite a weather. A wonderful weather, though. I guess clear weather. And you know, we had a long, slow spring with all these cloudy days and so on. So we're definitely in the dog days. Just in time for this fantastic celebration.
Dog days don't even begin until late July.
You're right.
August. We're already in the dog days.
It's early dog days, yeah. But do you remember? You remember the old studio when we used to sweat? We would be really, how do you say, warm?
Kyle, I'm pointing to a sign on the wall, and the sign says, "Do not talk about the oppressive heat conditions in the studio," because you got to flip it over, because that basically makes it seem like we're always complaining and the listeners can't identify. And then it ran out of space again. I think there's a second sheet. Can someone find the second sheet to that notice?
I think it's...
No, it was here before.
No, it's right next to the instructions for the sauna, which is actually a feature of this control room in the new facility.
Yeah, it turned out our last studio was a sauna. We didn't know that.
That's right. I think there. That's the explanation for the stack of fresh towels out there, and we'll just...
Some traditions die hard.
Well, we got a sizzle here in the heat. It's a good way to detoxify the ugliness of the world.
It's actually... I'm not supposed to tell anybody this. It's a part of a secret program. Over the years, USB staff have, like most people, have gained a certain amount of weight. They won't exercise, they won't diet in an intelligent way, so these are how we shed those excess pounds, by making us sweat it out while we're on the air.
Mm.
And, you know, they're looking out for us. That's how I look at it. But no, Kyle, we're not supposed to talk about the weather or the heat.
I'm sorry,
to talk about the holiday. Today's a holiday.
I brought it up. I'm feeling independent.
Both Independence Day and July 4th.
I am enjoying my liberty.
Are you? Are you really?
I think I am.
Because it doesn't look that way to me.
No, I am. I really am. I'm honest.
Uh-huh.
Honest, I am. I have... My freedom is somewhere. I'm aware of my freedom.
You're aware of your freedom?
It's about me.
All right. Well, you know.
Somewhere. Yeah.
We'll be tested on this quite a bit, I think. We're being tested on it right now, in fact.
Are we ever?
Oh, boy. What a week. Well, okay. Last week, we had our 40th anniversary show. That was a lot of fun. We were able to hit the pause button on world events. And, of course, the 2 weeks before that, we were away doing remote programs. Wasn't Iceland nice?
Oh, it was an interesting place. Mystical and very, I don't know, had this great wonder of it, you know, just a mm-hmm. real magic to it.
It
just
did.
Something around every corner and so lush, very well, full of life in the middle of the water there.
Something around every corner, but, you know, most times I was another tourist if you were not careful. You need to get out of the city because, boy, there's tourists everywhere. And especially the loud, drunken American kinds, you know, that really make things annoying. You got to get away from that. We rented a car and we drove around, and it was the best thing we ever did. We just saw so much nature, scenery, Icelandic horses, you name it. It's all out there. And the thing is, you know, we only did this on the way back from Scotland. Because we didn't want to fly all the way back, you know, have that nice long flight, which is agony. So we took a 2-hour flight from Scotland to Reykjavik. It only cost $100. You know, if you do it right, you can get this for really cheap. And there we are in Iceland. We spend a few days in Iceland, then we take another flight, which isn't that long, back to New York from there. But wow, what a good stopover point. And you can do that. Some airlines offer you up to a week you can stop over on your way overseas.
So they really encourage it. They want more people to stop by, and you know, they are the life of that tourist industry there, and they really are proud of their place in the country, and it is It you can really tell. It's very fun to explore.
I would caution them, though, let's not bring too many more people in, because, boy, there's a lot of tourists already, and you can't swing your arms around without hitting one of them. I know. I'm sorry. I did that several times. But it's just, you know, there's something about spatial awareness that's different in different countries. And Iceland is one of those countries where you have close walkers behind you. A close walker is basically you're walking down the street at what you think is a normal pace, and you're aware that somebody is right on your tail. And, you know, that doesn't happen in New York. People walk fast in New York, but they don't do that. And I've noticed that in Scandinavian countries, and Iceland is a Scandinavian country, so I guess they pick that up. But it just seems like, even though there's all this space, it seems like there isn't enough space. So that's why we wanted to get out of the city as much as possible. But even when we did that, if you find a cool waterfall or you know, bubbling spring or something, there's tourists there as well. So I would just caution them, let's not bring in too many more people, because, boy, it's really getting popular.
But they are so interesting to meet people that are from there, and we'll definitely go back at like a off season, I think. But more on some of our coverage there in shows to come.
Yeah, we recorded some audio, and we're going to have excerpts from that in weeks ahead. We met a listener, Johan. It was great hanging out and sharing stories, learning something about the country. I wasn't aware that Iceland wasn't independent until fairly recently, as kind of a result of World War II, and the Danish influence and all that. So much of interest. I mean, just the fact that they have a different naming convention. This is something that is alien to the rest of us in the Western world. But basically, it's very simple. You don't have a last name like you do here. All right. You basically are named after your parent. Actually, I guess it's only your father. Yeah, I think that's how it works. Although I think there are exceptions to that. But let's say my father was named John, whatever. I would be Emmanuel Johnson, son of John. Now,
right.
If there was a female version of me, that person would be named female name John's daughter, and spelled Dottir. And if you look at names in Iceland, every single name ends in either son or daughter. And it's really different. Now, how does that work in the phone book? Everybody is listed by their first name. I'm not kidding. They're listed by their first name in the phone book. And next to that, next to their name, to make it easier to find people, their profession. That's how alien this is. Can you imagine having your job title next to your name in the phone book? Can you imagine a phone book? these are things that we just are not familiar with. But that's how they do it over there.
There's also a lot of differences in the alphabet and other attributes mm-hmm. of the language that are really, really interesting. And it was cool to take on and add that another different way of communicating to our fun experiences in these places that are so different.
If you ever want to watch some fun entertainment, go around to DHS, to customs people, when a flight from Iceland is arriving and a family is showing up, and they're trying to figure out, why don't the kids have the same last name as the parents? And the customs guys, they can never learn this. They can never learn that they're different and that the names are not going to match. The first name will be in there, but not the last name, because the last name is simply changed with every generation.
Is that's surname, right?
Yes. Surname is your last name. Yes.
So surname is based on a prename.
Your given name, yeah.
Your given name. Yeah, that's what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't understand the etymology of those words either, but that's... So, yeah, Iceland. It's filled with all kinds of cool things. The horses alone are worth a visit. You know, the horses lie down over there. They do. The horses lie down like dogs and cats, and they just seem so relaxed. The reason for that, I looked it up, they're built differently. They don't have the long, stiff legs that American horses have. They're less prone to disease. In fact, they have very, very little disease, which is why an Icelandic horse... is not allowed to come back to Iceland if he or she chooses to leave Iceland for whatever reason. And also, horses from any other part of the world are not allowed to go to Iceland. So if you have a horse, do not plan a vacation with that horse in Iceland. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, your horse will be in quarantine the whole time.
No, your horse will be turned away.
Wow, they won't even hold the horse.
Yeah,
wow.
Even quarantine is something that they don't want the horse to infect.
Right, right. No, they keep the horses just out, straight out. Wow.
So, yeah.
I'm glad you found out the answer to that. That was interesting.
There were so many things. So many things I wanted to look up and find out about. And I had to immerse myself in culture. You know, when I was returning on the Icelandic plane that we took, instead of watching the American blockbusters on the entertainment screen, I watched Icelandic films, which you can do if you fly an Icelandic airline. And it was cool. It would never fly in this country. The films would not be popular, but you learn things about the culture and about, you know, how people are. And you see the scenery. You see the same things that that we saw in Reykjavik, for instance.
Yeah, definitely. And we would love to get into more of the cultural stuff. There's a incredible music sense that the music scene there was very much alive.
Yes.
There's many, you know, sort of... cliched artists that people think of, like Bjork and so on, but just in general, looking at some of the shows and festivals they were going to have this summer, I was kind of blown away of it as a destination.
Now, you mentioned Bjork, and that's interesting because Bjork is a first name.
Yeah.
And that's how everybody refers to each other in that country, by their first name. That's why she's called Bjork. It's not her stage name, it's her name.
Her daughter would be Bjork's daughter.
Yeah, I guess so. If it was a female.
If it wasn't patrilineal. If it was matrilineal.
Yeah, using the female name. I'm not sure how that works, to be honest.
What if there isn't a guy in the picture? I mean, that happens.
That does happen. Or maybe it's time that it be split evenly or something.
I'm sure there's definitely been a discussion of this there.
That's a tough one. That's a tough one to get past. You know, that patriarchal system they've got.
Right, switching around.
Yeah. Anyway, those are the things you'll think about if you go to Iceland and immerse yourself in the culture. But we're back now. We're back in this country, and we're immersing ourselves in our culture.
Whoa, are we talking loudly because we're back in this culture?
No,
that's what Americans do, is they talk loudly and throw their overweight around.
Well, look, let's get to the real news items in a moment. I just want to get to some of the other transient items first.
Okay. Okay.
Tropical wave.
What?
Tropical wave.
Wait, now, is that like a soft drink or something?
No, it's not a soft drink. It's not something you do at a baseball stadium.
Okay.
It's basically the first step in building a hurricane.
Oh.
You start with a tropical wave. I don't know if it's just one single wave. Is that what it is? No, it's got to be more than that. But they say this tropical wave in the Atlantic could become storm or depression by tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are looking forward to hurricanes and stormy weather and all sorts of things like that. Oh, can you imagine how Trump, and that's the first time I've said that word this hour, by the way, can you imagine how Trump will deal with a catastrophic storm? Tweet at it. He will tweet at the storm, but I doubt he'll do much else.
Very sloppy. Somebody will be criticized.
Yeah.
And he will be right about something.
Failing storm Sandy
is
now off the coast. I don't know. It's not funny. It's not funny. I'm not laughing. Not funny.
You know what? It would definitely bring out the rugged individualist, you know, in my American identity. I don't know that I would come running to him for a whole heck of a lot of help.
No, you come running at him to get him out of the way.
Yeah. Yeah, as any citizen would, or group of citizens.
And I think citizens are going to wake up. I know there's a lot of frustration out there. People saying, "What, you know, when are we going to wake up?" I think people are waking up. It's just a question of what do we do. You know, the pigeons come home to roost. Look at Governor Christie. you saw the craziness that happened over the weekend.
That was funny.
That idiot. I mean, he is a massive idiot in so many ways. But wow, closes the government down because of a budget dispute. And then plants his ass on the beach while a plane by the New York Star Ledger, I didn't know they had planes, flew over and took a picture of him. He saw the plane. He knew what they were doing, or he must have known somebody got his picture. Then he tries to deny that he was on the beach getting sun. They're the only people allowed on the beach, the governor and his family and friends, while everybody else was denied access because of the government shutdown. And then he goes before the press and says, yeah, so what? I did that. No, I wasn't getting sun. I had a hat on, so that means I wasn't getting sun. You know, just basically not caring that he's basically giving a big middle finger to everybody in the state. This is what you get when you elect people like this. People who say us first are really saying me first. And that's always what it's going to turn out being in the end.
With power, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big up or a shout out to small papers, because they don't own a plane; they just hired one.
Yes,
right. It's like, yeah, you just send your photographer up, and when you have a small paper with a staff,
I don't think you should keep calling the New York Star Ledger a small paper.
Well, I mean,
they have a plane for God, or they can get a plane.
Regional papers, mm-hmm. Okay. Sorry, not small, but if it's a big consolidated. Massive paper that is maybe wouldn't be compelled to because of their commercial interests, but with this local person on hand, you know, somebody that is doing the work, you get a funny incident like this, mm-hmm. And it shows, and there were several pictures, wide shots, tight shots of Chris Christie laying on the beach, and it just outright, like the traditional thing, you know, it spoke so many words about inequity and like the dichotomy between mm-hmm. people in power and those that are just regular citizens that would have also maybe liked to take in a park on a holiday weekend.
Absolutely. I can't think of a worse thing to happen to him. But the thing is, he's on his way out. He's in 6 months. He won't be governor anymore. Doesn't really care. But it just goes to show how little regard the people are seen in the eyes of those who govern when they govern on a selfish platform. And you know, one thing that's really hard to dispute is that that's what Christie has been under for the whole reign of his time. And certainly that's what we're facing right now on a federal level. Anyway, so getting back to the tropical wave. It's located about 800 miles west-southwest of the Cabo Verde Islands. I don't know where that is, in the central Atlantic Ocean somewhere. They say it could become a tropical storm or depression in the next 24 hours. As of 8 a.m., the system was moving northwestward toward the Caribbean at about 10 to 15 miles per hour. Favorable conditions mean the wave has a high chance of forming into a tropical storm or depression in the next 5 days. System has a 70% chance of forming by Thursday, 80% chance of forming by Sunday. Current models have the storm arriving in the Lesser Antilles Islands by Saturday. Those are the ones we don't care about because they're the Lesser Antilles. A trough of low pressure may drive it further northwest toward Bermuda, the Bahamas, and the east coast of the United States. Yeah, if the system develops into a storm, it would be named Don, making it the fourth named storm of the season. Wait, there have been three other storms? I haven't even heard of the three other storms. A, B, and C. What were those?
They didn't really come through. They were a whimper. Wow. They weren't enough to garner the attention and take away from all the other boulder dash that we've been subjected
well,
to.
Well, it says here Tropical Storm Cindy made landfall near the Texas and Louisiana border, dumping heavy rain along the coast and the Florida Panhandle. But, I'm sorry, we were away, I guess, when
it
this happened.
It did get crazy down there. I think we saw some reports. But
well, they say this year's hurricane season is expected to be average to above average. Forecast is expecting 11 to 17 named storms and at least 5 hurricanes. So that sounds promising. You know what's funny about this story? I'm reading this now. It comes from the Miami Herald. On page 2, the line that I just read, this year's hurricane season is expected to be average to above average. And on the next page, It's a big screaming headline that says forecasters predict above average Atlantic hurricane season. So it's like they heard their own sentence and decided to exaggerate it a little bit and say, wow, we're facing above average possibly. And I hope we do. I hope we do.
Yeah, you're looking forward to this, aren't you?
Yeah, totally. Don, come on. We're waiting. I mean, Don, for God's sake.
Where are we at? Where the onset or the influx of hurricane season is something to look forward to?
No. The name is Don.
Oh, it's the one.
Donald. Don, you know, yeah. The same damn name.
It's the one. Okay, yeah. All right.
Actually, I just realized that now myself, but boy, that would be something, wouldn't it?
Hurricane Don comes in. Wreaks all kind of havoc. Wow, what a coincidence. Maybe this will be it.
Well, it'll be one step in the big it that will hit.
Well, nature's fighting back. It's got to have its say. And wow.
Speaking of mayhem and chaos, mm-hmm. If you're local, you might want to avoid North Ocean Avenue in Farmingville tonight because of road closures. Yes, there'll be fireworks tonight at Bald Hill. That's where our transmitter is, by the way, so hopefully they can aim them properly this time. The road will be closed in both directions between Horse Block Road and Route 25 between 8 and 10 p.m. Drivers expect delays starting at 7 p.m. and ending sometime on Friday, or actually 11 p.m., but just avoid the area. The event will be held at the Penny Saver Amphitheater. It includes live music and is free, according to the amphitheater website. It's like Newsday doesn't believe them. According to their website, it's free, but we know better, don't we? Doors open at 5 p.m., so the doors are open right now, and people are scrambling in there and not paying anything to do so, except for the long hours they'll be waiting in cars later. So that's tonight. You know, every night there's been fireworks someplace. That's what I mean about this long weekend. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, now Tuesday. 5 days of the 4th of July, for God's sake. When does it end? When does it end?
When we're independent, okay? When we are good and independent.
And today, of course, was the Nathan's famous hot dog eating contest.
Oh, yeah.
Every 4th of July, they do this. And, you know, the same guy that wins it, this is like his 10th time. I forget what his name is. It doesn't even say in this article, because that's how little we care now. But he ate the most hot dogs. And boy, I don't know how he feels after that. 10 times. You know, that's enough, whoever you are.
We had hot dogs in Iceland. They've got a hot dog thing there.
Late at night, yes. This is an important tip. If you find yourself wandering around the streets late at night, and by late at night, I mean 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, when it's still light, the sun isn't above the horizon, but it's still brightly lit. It's like daytime. You might not be able to find food in regular establishments, but there are hot dog carts, and we had no trouble finding them. And they're basically, there's like 3 different ones, but they're all the same hot dog, and they're all kind of unique.
Yeah, it's strange. They have like, you basically can get it with everything or with, you know, less of everything.
But everything isn't really, it doesn't look like everything.
Yeah, because they put everything under the actual hot dog, and they have special sauces, and you know, they have it just right, and it's interesting.
And they make something crunchy somehow. I'm not sure how they do that.
Yeah, I think that's a fried onion.
Is that what, like you can't see it, though.
It's dried onion.
It's hidden underneath the hot dog.
Makes it nice and crunchy.
But it's real. When you're starving at 2 in the morning, it's just the thing.
Yes, really after you've been thrown out of pubs and you're dodging,
okay, you know what?
Americans.
The damn British pub, is that what they called on that main street there? There's an American pub and a British pub. And the British pub had some kind of stupid dress code that apparently we didn't meet.
They didn't like the way I looked. And
we
I got,
will never go there again. How about that? We went to an Icelandic pub instead who had no problem whatsoever with our appearance. And boy, did we fit in well there.
Yeah, that was great.
That was amazing.
We did all right there. So we were actually mentioning this very contest, and here we are, and the guy who's done it 10 times in a row, he wins.
Yeah.
So everything is right in that world, in that realm, in that reality,
no,
that dimension.
No, Kyle, everything is not right, because there was trouble. There was trouble.
Wait, at the hot dog
at the hot dog eating contest, there was trouble today.
Okay.
Shortly after the men's competition began at around 12:40 p.m., around 12:40 p.m., I guess it's a women's competition. I don't know.
Of course. Why wouldn't there be?
And a children's competition. Who knows? Who knows? There's certainly a dog's competition, you know?
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine that? can your dog finish off all these hot dogs in a certain amount of time?
Whoa. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, a handful of attendees were seen getting on each other's shoulders in what looked like an attempt to flag the attention of nearby television cameras. A few of them tried to hold up a banner, but the jostling crowd made whatever was on the sign indistinguishable. The attendees were only up on their fellow attendees' shoulders for a few seconds before NYPD officers bolted into the crowd and wrestled them to the ground. One onlooker appeared to have his glasses broken in the incident. The five people were taken away in handcuffs and later charged with civil disobedience. Now, okay, I don't understand this. Since when is standing on someone's shoulders and holding up a banner an arrestable offense? I don't care what the banner was saying. Was it anti-Trump? Was it pro-Trump? Was it anti-hot dog? Who knows? Who cares? Why are we arresting people for holding up banners and standing on each other's shoulders at a big, massive public event, which is exactly when you're supposed to do things like that?
Maybe they wanted vegetarian or, like, vegan hot dogs.
It doesn't matter. Maybe they wanted more hot dogs. We should not be doing things like this. It's bad. It's bad for everybody. And I just see too much of this where we see anybody expressing themselves in any way that doesn't follow the script as a threat. And that's not a threat. That's actually what makes us great. So we need more of that, not less of it. I'd like to know what was on the banner, but I'll tell you this, even if I totally disagree with what was on the banner, I still think they shouldn't have been arrested for holding it up.
Yeah, that's real heavy-handedness for what is, and basically becomes the antithesis of expression, which is the point and what we rally around so frequently when we get misty about democracy or our republic as republic proper. So yeah, why constantly, and why can't we let humorous things like this be what they are? I mean, we have overreaction and this fear that we have, and that becomes these heavy-handed tactics that anything doesn't conform to this real stringent concept of how things should go because of this this potential for disruption. Well, let the sign or let the banner be what it is, and mm-hmm. and people can judge it. That is expression.
We need more signs, more banners, more expressions of whatever people want to express. And right now, I feel like we're in a society where people are afraid to do that. And that is not healthy. That is really not healthy. Now, I want to play something that got some publicity this week, and it's very, very disturbing what has been revealed, what has come out. It is a recruitment video, a one-minute recruitment video put out by the National Rifle Association. And I just want you to hear the tone here. The words that are being said, the basic mood that is struck with this statement that was put out for no particular reason. Actually, it was put out a little while ago, about a month or two ago, but only gained recognition this week when it showed up on Facebook. Go figure. Let's take a listen. This is the recruitment video, or just a publicity video, one sort or another, from National Rifle Association.
They use their media to assassinate real news. They use their schools to teach children that their president is another Hitler. They use their movie stars and singers and comedy shows and award shows to repeat their narrative over and over again. And then they use their ex-president to endorse the resistance, all to make them march, make them protest, make them scream racism and sexism and xenophobia and homophobia, to smash windows, burn cars, shut down interstates and airports, bully and terrorize the law-abiding, until the only option left is for the police to do their jobs and stop the madness. And when that happens, they'll use it as an excuse for their outrage. The only way we stop this, the only way we save our country and our freedom, is to fight this violence of lies with the clenched fist of truth. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that is the statement from the National Rifle Association. Now, there is so much we can take out of this. But the first thing I think that we need to point out is that any talk that we have heard in the past about the Second Amendment in the views of the National Rifle Association being primarily so that people can bear arms in the face of an oppressive government, that is utter nonsense. It was never what the National Rifle Association stood for. All right. They stand for their own agenda. They stand for their own right-wing, ultra-white agenda here. And you would expect, you know, we are in a situation now where we have an oppressive government in the eyes of many. I know not everybody will agree with that, but it is true in the eyes of many. So for those people that that believe that, well, having the right to bear arms is an important thing. But that's not what we're hearing here. We're hearing that the people who oppose this government are the threat, and they are the ones that must be met with the clenched fist of truth. There's all these violent analogies and words used here, and basically presenting things as if all the violence is coming from one side, when that is precisely not what's happening. Listen to this. Make them scream racism and sexism and xenophobia and homophobia, as if the people opposing the Trump administration are the racist, sexist, xenophobic, and homophobic people. Instead of saying make them scream about racism and sexism, they basically phrase it in a way that makes it seem like they're the source of it. Smash windows, burn cars, shut down interstates, bully and terrorize the law-abiding. When does this happen? Yeah, there are occasional riots in our history, but you can count them on one hand. Most of the demonstrations are completely passive and civil and very open to everybody, as opposed to Trump rallies, which have been violent. In fact, you have the guy leading the Trump rallies encouraging people to punch protesters in the face, as he did last year. You have our president putting out a video, as he did this week, of him pummeling someone with a CNN microphone as their head. It was basically a doctored video of something in the Worldwide Wrestling Foundation. That is where the violence is coming from, and for them to make the opposition into the threat, into something that needs to be put down, that is scary. That scares the crap out of me, because this is a tool of fascism right here. And if you believe that the NRA stood for your freedom to bear arms and stand up against an oppressive government, think again. That's not what they're about. That's not what they've ever been about. And if you're a gun enthusiast, great. Be a gun enthusiast, but at least be honest about it. And don't tell yourself that that's one of the reasons why. It's not. You might be into hunting, you might think that it helps you with self-defense, whatever, but it's not about, and it's never been about, protecting yourself from the government, because these people will shoot you before you ever get anywhere close to the government, because they are stooges. They are stooges for what's in power now.
Yeah, they're basically lobbying. They've been lobbying and will continue to lobby. And their interests may have the guise of these things such as liberty or a clenched fist of truth, whatever that is. They're definitely drawing upon that. But like you said, practically, it's precisely the trumpeting of allegiance through militia, mm-hmm. that would be the force that goes up against a regime such as the one we're actually facing. So what they're actually saying in this PR video is precisely what they would purport to be against, but because it's threatening stuff they've lobbied for, or I guess ideologies they have lobbied for and feel as though they're in power, they are protecting that through changing actually the purpose and the perception and trying to hype up the opposition, those who would resist what has proven to be a pretty horrendous administration, by painting them as automatically violent or the enemy or radical, they're not even saying they're going to come for your guns, like, legally. It's really like, this is like zombie apocalypse language. Like, they're going to come and we're going to have to protect
this is what
this
they
administration.
Do. But this is what they do. They make you afraid, whether it's afraid of immigrants, afraid of somebody who's racially different than you, a different religion, or just the resistance, the opposition. Saying that anti-Trump people are by definition violent is such an absurdity. I mean, they're in any group, you can go to a bunch of Buddhists and find somebody violent there. But the amount of violent people in the opposition is so slim as to be almost inconsequential, but they are basically changing the narrative to make it appear as if that is the default behavior, violence. And, you know, if you watch the video, you see scenes. It's really horribly put together, but it is kind of funny. You just see all these people demonstrating and things on fire, and half of it probably didn't even happen when they said it happened. But you can easily dwarf that by showing other instances of violence in another direction. But the point is, it's legitimate opposition. It's resistance is how this country was founded. Okay, so by making resistance into a dirty word, they're really showing their true colors. But it's also just so hypocritical because the NRA has always tried to make it appear as if they stand up for the rights of the individual, and they don't. They stand up for the right-wing, conservative, white agenda. And, you know, the way to really demonstrate this, I want to read something from BuzzFeed that appeared recently. Such hypocritical flip-flopping really came to a head in the NRA's brief statement about Philando Castile. Remember the guy who was killed by a Minnesota police officer, I believe last year. This is the guy that basically told the cops, "I have a gun, tell me what to do," and was shot because the cop panicked. The video was released after the cop was found completely innocent of any wrongdoing. Horrible, horrible chain of events there. Really shameful. Their statement the day after that happened, it'll make you laugh, even though this is really not anything to laugh about. But it starts off, "As the nation's largest and oldest civil rights organization." Did you ever think of the National Rifle Association as a civil rights organization? "The NRA proudly supports the right of law-abiding Americans to carry firearms for defense of themselves and others, regardless of race, religion, or sexual orientation. The reports from Minnesota are troubling and must be thoroughly investigated. In the meantime, it is important for the NRA not to comment while the investigation is ongoing. Rest assured, the NRA will have more to say once all the facts are known." Well, here we are. The facts are known. The trial is over. All right, we saw the video. And a year later, when there are enough facts, the dash cam video of the incident was released last month, and in it, Castile can be heard saying calmly, "Sir, I have to tell you that I do have a firearm on me," seconds before being shot by a clearly panicked cop. And new heartbreaking footage also emerged of his 4-year-old daughter who witnessed the shooting from the back seat. I mean, how do you shoot somebody in a car who has their kid with them, no matter what they're doing? Begging her furious mother, and we all heard her mother on the video that was released last year.
That was her video.
The video she made on her phone.
Right. That was her doing like Facebook Live or something.
Incredibly calm, incredibly respectful of the man who just killed her husband. Calling him sir, I mean, how do you stay so composed?
Yeah, but saying please don't tell me you just shot my husband, sir.
And sir, I'm doing what you asked me. Completely calm. I don't understand how somebody can remain that calm, but that's such a testament to the patience that people have shown. But seeing his daughter, their daughter, begging her mother in the aftermath to stop berating the officer's mom, "Please don't scream. I don't want you to get shooted." To have a kid have to even entertain that notion. And as we mentioned, the cop was tried and acquitted on all charges last month.
He was the one screaming.
Yeah, the cop was screaming yelling at the top of his lungs.
He was yelling at Philando after he'd shot him like 4 times.
After seeing these videos, after witnessing the tremendous injustice of a trial here, The NRA has remained officially silent, despite pleas from their own members to speak out in Castile's defense. Have not said a word.
It's the training and the overall systemic attitudes that are both the complex, like the conjunction of the two, the combination is what makes this so deadly. Because they're trained to just react so quickly, and then you have systemic issues and racism. It just, it becomes these like tragic moments of but it's completely avoidable if there was different training and if there was different attitudes about this, and it wasn't about just shooting and then asking questions later. Being on such edge does not seem like a way to like handle a situation and read the situation, because they've acted in ways that are irreversible and unforgiving before they can even assess the situation. Mm-hmm. What is that? That is not, it does not seem like by the book at all.
The NRA had an opportunity here to demonstrate that they had standards, that they basically stood for what they said they stood for, and that's individual people and their right to have arms, a right that is disputed by many, but they could have made that point, that position clear. And they didn't. They basically side only with white people. When it's a black person, they remain silent. They wait for all the facts to come in. When the facts come in, they don't say anything to support that, because that doesn't fit into their narrative of basic. And I hate to say it like this, because it sounds kind of extremist to say this, but white supremacy over minorities, cops being able to shoot with impunity, and black people not getting out of their place. 50 years ago, Black Panthers marched into the California State Assembly with weapons to demonstrate their power, and it was allowed under the law. NRA didn't support that then. They would not support that now. A bunch of white people did that, they would be right there with them. That is a hypocrisy. That is why these people are not what they say they are, and they need to be called out. Whether a new organization needs to be formed, or we need to rethink our fascination with weapons in the first place, that's a discussion to have, but let's at least identify what is clearly wrong here. Now, the person making that video, Dana Loesch, she's an NRA spokeswoman. She's on conservative media all the time. The words that she spoke in that video, every single word basically evokes violence to the point of relying on extraordinary metaphors. It's again coming from the BuzzFeed article. The only way we stop this, the only way we save our country and our freedom, is to fight this violence of lies with the clenched fist of truth. How does one assassinate news, real or fake, or form a clenched fist of truth? Her script takes a turn for the utterly reckless. The NRA wants to scare Americans into buying guns. Shortly after the video was revealed at their Atlanta forum, the CEO Wayne LaPierre followed up by labeling, and this is really frightening, labeling academic elites, political elites, and media elites as America's greatest domestic threats. That's us, folks. That's the people you listen to on WUSB and many other places. And, college campuses, people who have differing political opinions, people who you might refer to as intelligent people, or intellectuals even. They are seen as a threat. Academic elites, political elites, media elites. They are America's greatest domestic threats. Not violent criminals, not people who think they can do whatever they want and get away with all kinds of things, including murder. No, not them. The people who differ. Those are the biggest threats. The people who are questioning Trump, the people who are asking the hard questions, the people who are exposing the facts, they are the threat. These guys, they won the damn election. They're in the White House. They basically are in the majority in most states in the country. And yet they are acting as if they're under occupation. This is how they act. This is how they behave. And it's really shameful. Anyway, Loesch stood by the video arguing on Periscope that the language of the left is violence and that liberal critics are the dullest crayons in the box. I'm not exactly sure what that means.
I think it's an insult.
It doesn't sound like a compliment. Yeah, but, the dullest crayons, are they the violent ones? You'd think the brightest ones would be the violent ones.
I don't know. Does that mean, like, they're low-key? They're not, like, in the public eye?
I don't know much about crayons. I don't know how to equate them with people.
How many? What? Okay, first of all, what size crayon
box, because I know there's like a 10 box crayon set. That's a limited amount of colors, but it could be 36. I think they have even bigger. I think they have 48. We all talked.
Did you have
kids.
The kind that you had the sharpener in the back? You'd stick it in and you could sharpen your crayon.
Yeah,
and it opened up like it had a lid on top.
Right, and then you see all the different colors in that you've been sharpening.
64. I think I had 64 different colors.
That's a lot of crayons. We should talk to some. I'm sure some kids would correct us. They'll write in or something. But
even as a kid, I wondered what flesh meant, because the flesh was. That's like, that's not what your color is. So why do you call that flesh?
I think they actually changed that.
Did they change that? Good.
They might have changed
At 6 years old, I had a problem with
that. Yeah, no, I think they were pretty sensitive to that. But they didn't have. I don't think Crayola has any, like, gunmetal colors or anything. They don't name anything after, like, ammo.
I'll say this now. I have no problem with Crayola. All right, they haven't done anything to upset me.
No, I think it's
I'm sure someone will write in and tell me I'm wrong and that they did something horrible. But as of now, I think they're cool.
Yeah, it's like charcoal and black, not like gunpowder or anything like that.
Anyway, another they have NRA TV. Really, is an NRA TV?
Oh Lord!
Another NRA TV host named Grant Stinchfield, a conspiracy theorist known for blaming minorities for gun violence. Yeah, they're the problem. He filmed a response video. A response video to this video already? What are you responding to? You didn't go far enough? This one is three times as long as Loesch's ad, and it basically exists to rebuke prominent critics arguing that they were either hypocrites or professional rioters. Yeah, professional rioters. You know, I have not gotten my check in 2 weeks. I will not riot until I'm paid full benefits and everything we fought for, or I will riot against the rioting company that I work for.
Yeah, well, if you belong to the rioters union, you won't be out of work, and you'll get checks for injuries sustained if you get whooped.
You know, there is just so much that we could be talking about as far as the threats that we've been facing. And by we, I just mean the American people in general, freedom-loving people in general. On the 4th of July, you really have to recognize that dissent is patriotic, that questioning should be expected, that the media is something that is essential to a democracy. And all of this has been under relentless attack from the highest office of this nation. The rest of the world does not know what to make of us. And you know, we can say that firsthand knowledge, traveling around, talking to people.
Yeah, that's definitely true. People are confused. They really do not know what to make of it. And they expect us to have an answer, and that's difficult too sometimes. Until we get going, then I think we see it was helpful for us to at least try to articulate it. But everywhere we went, people really thought we would have all the answers. But I think it's growth, mm-hmm. and it was good to at least be able to ally some of the fears that people were convinced were nigh.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it just goes back to not being intimidated, not being afraid to express yourself. And this goes for everybody. And we've said this over the years. It doesn't matter if you disagree, if you stand for something that Kyle and I disagree with. We still support your right. We still know what was on that banner in Coney Island today. We support the right for people to express themselves one way or another. We don't support the right of people to attack others, to intimidate others, to be violent or engage in unbecoming behavior. But expressing an opinion, that's not anything like that. Never should be considered that way. Should never be considered a threat. To call these people the greatest domestic threat is really unhealthy and speaks volumes as to the position that they stand for.
It's also giving them a lot of credit, mm-hmm. because you have to realize on all sides, there's a spectrum of individuals involved. There's a spectrum of gun owners. Okay?
Oh, of course. Yeah, you think a lot of NRA members are infuriated by this.
Right.
And those are not the people we're talking about. In fact, you know, you guys should basically start the revolution there and get rid of whoever is running that organization and just rethink it, making it to something a bit more representative.
We could, yeah, that help could be really beneficial, to have people help interpret some of the ideas and tactics and tactics are a real, I mean, tactics aren't everything about a particular movement. I mean, you get this a lot with protests, and we're not used to protests in the U.S. like as frequently as you would see in Venezuela right now,
yeah,
or in other parts of the world, all the way back to the Arab Spring. Like, we started seeing a lot more activity and fierce protests that we really haven't yet and not much experience with, and it's called, you know, the anarchists or whatever when we do see it, and or Black Bloc. But that, you have to remember, that is a tactic, it's not a group, so we can't rationalize and explain every individual's actions in every group, and you know, you have to remember that about all people involved.
We have to get more used to demonstrations and more used to expressing ourselves and not intimidated into not saying what's on our mind. And I think a lot of people feel that way now. You know, you see Trump stickers everywhere. You don't see stickers for anti-Trump because people are afraid what might happen to them. That is unhealthy. That can't continue. But I want to, in concluding today, just read a few tweets from this guy, this reporter, Jared Yates Sexton, who revealed something about that CNN GIF that Trump released over the weekend, and how it was basically from an anti-Semitic meme and was obviously from a racist source that was revealed. The White House has been silent on that. And in the wake of that, he says, I received numerous threats. I was told people wanted to shoot, strangle me, hang me, throw me out of a helicopter. Some assumed I was Jewish because I spoke out against anti-Semitism. Others said I was a race traitor. I got it on both sides. Now articles are showing up on neo-Nazi websites or videos spliced with Goebbels telling me not to test his patients. Also footage from Natural Born Killers of a journalist being executed by shotgun. On forums, under my tweets is a list of excerpts from newspaper articles about journalists being slaughtered. Meanwhile, people are claiming I'm making up the threats and immediately threatening me in the same message. On Facebook, I'm getting messages from strangers about Goyim, talking about what happened to Jews in the 40s. This environment is the creation of the man in the White House. There are valid criticisms of the media, many on point. This isn't that. When you start calling a group of people enemies of the country, this is what happens. When you call them scum, this happens. This is what happens when you have Alex Jones calling mainstream media pedophiles and Satan worshipers and threatening to crush them. This environment we have right now is volatile. Some of these threats are empty, but people who are unwell consume this stuff. Even as I'm typing this, I'm getting anti-Semitic memes and messages. It's happening in real time. And everyone keeps bringing up the shooting in Virginia. In a way, they're right. That's what happens in this environment. This shouldn't be a country where these violent instincts are cultivated and encouraged. We're at a real tipping point right now. But make no mistake, there's something growing in this country, and it's very, very ugly. And on that note, we want to wish you a happy Independence Day, and we'll be back again next week with another fun edition of Off the Wall. And is that a new single from Neil Young that just got released for the Independence Day weekend?
My word!
Wow. You know, if there's one good thing to come out of all this, it's that people are standing up and expressing themselves and being vocal. And,
heck yeah.
Yeah, this is what we need more of.
More art.
Express yourself, people. You're our only hope. OTW at 2600.com. Have a good night.
Bye.
Stand up for what you believe. Resist the powers that be. Preserve the land and save the seas for the children of destiny. Ever lose and evil steal the day? Should happy sing the blues and peaceful fade away? What would you do? What would you say? How would you act on? We'll be right back.
capital is yours. The people feel the pain. They feel the pain. They walk the streets while the bombs fall.
We'll be right back. building just behind the bridge. He lays her down, he frowns. Gee, my life's a funny thing. Am I still too young? He kissed her then and there. She took his ring, took his babies. It took him minutes, took her nowhere. Heaven knows he'd have taken anything.
All night.
She wants a young American. She finds a slinky back upon. He calls as he passes, avoiding my sting. But heaven forbid she take anything. But the freak and his title for nothing. This is a step and cuts his hand. Showing nothing, it swoops like a song. She cries, where are all Papa's heroes gone?
All night.
She wants a young American.
dreamers.